Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending 7th of June 2013. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. And your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams, and I can assure you that name is right. Now this week's announcements, and we begin with several events in and around Winchester. First, a reminder that on Monday the 10th of June we have the AGM of Winchester Talking Newspaper at 3:30 p.m. at the Chesil Theatre, Chesil Street, Winchester, followed by a garden party at Steele's just along the road. On Tuesday the 11th of June, the Chesil Railway Tunnel will be open for a guided talk at both 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. The cost is £5. The same day, Tuesday the 11th of June, at the Hampshire Record Office from 6 to 8 p.m, there's Family History for Beginners. And on Tuesday the 18th of June, a week later, also at the Hampshire Record Office, there's Title Deeds as a Source for Family History. Booking is essential for both these events on 01962 846 154. That's 01962 846 154. On Wednesday the 12th of June at Winchester Guildhall from midday to 7 p.m, there's the latest Barton Farm Community Consultation. On the exhibition front at the Winchester Discovery Centre until the 14th of June, there's Making a Noise in Libraries. This is organised by the RNIB and it is specially for those with sight impairment. At the Everyman Cinema, Winchester, next week, the films are The Great Gatsby and Behind the Candelabra. Details and reservation from 0871 906 9060. That's 0871 906 9060. Finally, the following gardens are open on both the 13th and the 16th of June, under the National Gardens scheme. First, in Crawley, there are three gardens open from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. That are Bay Tree House, Little Court and Tanglefoot. The combined admission fee is £6. And from 12:30 to 5 p.m, Lake House, Northington Gardens are open and the admission fee is £4. The main headlines this... I'm really getting mixed up this morning. lighting up time ends on Friday the 7th of June at 4:53 a.m. and begins at 9:17 p.m. On Wednesday the 12th of June, it ends at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:21 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. The main headlines this week are: Attack on the Heart and Soul of the City, Emmerdes wants to bring food store to Winnall, and more sport provision needed, says report. So, can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Jean?
Yes, attack on the heart and soul of the city. Those were the judge's words to arsonist as he hands out 6-year jail sentence. An arsonist who started a spate of fires in Winchester on New Year's Day showed a reckless disregard for people's lives, a judge said on Tuesday. The recorder of Winchester, Judge Keith Cutler, told the court that the arson was an attack on the very heart and soul of the city. Sean Clements, 47, of no fixed abode, was jailed for 6 years after pleading guilty to 2 counts of arson and being reckless as to whether life was endangered. Arson and an assault were also included. Clements set fires at the deanery in the Cathedral Close. Phase 8 boutique in the High Street, and a rubbish bin near the Buttercross, an ancient monument, also in the High Street. Winchester Crown Court heard Clements had been assessed by psychiatrists and was not mentally ill, although he had suffered from depression. He was angry and drunk after a violent row at a party over his girlfriend. He punched a man, Edward Davis, who suffered a broken tooth after he went into a bedroom alone with his girlfriend. The court heard Clements then left the flat and started the fires. He was seen by witnesses and caught on CCTV. Judge Cutler added, "The arson attack seemed almost an explosion of hate and anger to the city and showed a reckless disregard for the lives of some of its inhabitants." Judge Cutler said lives were put at risk as people lived in the deanery and in flats above and next to the shop. No one was injured, though smoke entered the 800-year-old deanery and a nearby flat where a couple and their two young children live. Clements set fire to a charity bookstall in the doorway of historic deanery, a Grade 1 listed building, which raises funds for cathedral choristers. The blaze damaged the 400-year-old door, which cost £6,530 to repair, while loss of income from book sales was estimated at £22,750. The court heard Phase 8 has only just reopened after being virtually gutted. The repair bill came to £270,000, while the retail value of damaged stock was £156,000. The shop also lost trade for 5 months while it was closed. Judge Cutler told Clements the losses had been enormous and he was not able to pay one penny, though he had been able to get money to buy alcohol and get drunk that night. Adrienne Knight, defending, said Clements suffered from severe depression, was homeless, had been drinking, and was provoked by his girlfriend going off with another man at the party. She said he does, without doubt, wish none of this had happened. He certainly did not want to hurt anyone and would have been horrified if anyone had been hurt.
M&S want to bring food store to Winnell, and the plan would create 70 new jobs. Marks and Spencers wants to open a food store in Winnell, the Chronicle can reveal. The BBC Pensions Trust proposes to refurbish the former Hendy Ford car dealership on Eastern Lane into a supermarket, creating 24 full-time and 46 part-time jobs. Documents supplied with the application to the City Council last week show that M&S wants to move into the building once it is completed. The plan has been welcomed, but there are fears that it could be worsening traffic congestion at the Eastern Lane M3 A34 interchange. Ian Hamilton, Managing Director of the County Glass Group, next to Hendy Ford, said, "It'll be good as long as they sort out the access off Eastern Lane. If it's not sorted out, it'll be a nightmare, a death trap. They need traffic lights, but the application doesn't propose any alterations. It'll be a disaster if nothing is done. There have been accidents there." Local ward councillor Chris Pine said, "There will be more jobs coming, and we need them in Winnell. Our concerns are traffic, but we hope that by the time the development takes place, the junction will have been sorted out. The County Council proposes to solve the bottleneck by creating a third lane at the top of Eastern Lane and rejigging the traffic lights." Steve Gates, Chairman of the Chamber of Commerce, said, "We support any business expanding in Winchester. Food in an area M&S are doing really well in. It is great that Winchester is a location they want to expand further. I think the food store will complement the city centre, not replace it. It offers more choice for the consumer." Mr. Gates, the managing director of Denplan, said some of the traffic impact would be limited as much would be coming not from the city centre, but off the M3 by shoppers who previously would have gone to Hedge End or Chandler's Ford. Chris Turner, director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said, "I don't think that this will take business away from the town. We're not seeing any indication of a downturn on the high street. Winnall is rebranding itself. We are soon to have a hotel and less industry, more services, which is a good thing." A spokesman for M&S said, "M&S is keen to enhance its customer offer in Winchester, and we believe that the planned new development on Eastern Lane is the right location for us. If planning permission is granted and the development goes ahead, we would look forward to bringing an M&S Simply Food to Winchester in 2014. It will be around 15,000 square feet in size with around 50 parking spaces. Hendy Ford left in March 2012 to relocate a quarter of a mile along the Eastern Lane."
More sport provision needed, says report. Civic chiefs to look at options and costs. Consultants have identified a lack of sporting provision in Winchester, but have avoided the crunch issue of where any new centre should go. Continuum Leisure was commissioned by the City Council to carry out a study into Winchester's leisure needs. The report examined changes in population, participation, and the ambitions of local sports clubs. Campaigners have called for a new leisure complex at Bar End, including a 50-metre swimming pool and indoor running strip. Winchester Fit for the Future, an umbrella group of local clubs, argues River Park Leisure Centre is insufficient for the city's needs. The report said there was a need for more indoor and water sport provision and examined four options for a new centre. A £25 million centre with a 10-lane, 25-metre swimming pool and a 20-metre teaching pool. A £27 million complex with an 8-lane, 50-metre pool. And both options with a gymnastics centre, which would cost £28 million and £30 million respectively. It did not assess whether River Park would be able to meet the need if renovated. All options share a number of facilities, including a 12-court sports hall, large gym and tennis courts. River Park and Bar End were described as the only two options for location, but no site was recommended. The consultants were not asked to recommend a preferred site. Continuum highlighted the first option as most financially viable. The report said it is cheaper, provides a greater level of surplus over the 10-year forecast period, and, with a smaller footprint, could be deliverable in a slightly shorter timescale. Emma Back, of Fit for the Future, said she was happy to see the report shared several of the groups concerned. She said, "We have come up with similar proposals to our own plan. For example, they echo our concern that there is a lack of water space and recognise the need for more indoor court provision. But," she added, "we are very much of the opinion the facility is as flexible as possible in offering the broadest range of facilities, and that includes a 50-metre pool." She also said the cost could be met through fundraising and bringing in local partners rather than the council borrowing money. Councillor Keith Wood, the leader of Winchester City Council, said, "The next stage will be for us to look at the costs and benefits of the different options, including refurbishment of the existing centre in the light of the many competing service pressures on our budgets. It would cost £8 million to improve facilities at River Park, or £3 million only to make vital repairs to the building."
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Gorst, John Gorst, contentedly at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Green, Gladys Green, aged 92. Hucker, Hazel Zoe Hucker, peacefully. Pemberton, Robina Valerie Pemberton, peacefully. Ricketts, Alan John Ricketts, peacefully, and Sayer, Geoffrey Douglas Sayer, peacefully, aged 80. Christian comment this week is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And it's written by Terry E. Hemming and entitled Let Us Give Thanks for What Has Changed for the Better. In church on Sunday, we, with many, many others, said the prayer of thanksgiving for the 60th anniversary of the coronation of Her Majesty the Queen. I'm sure lots of Hampshire Chronicle readers will recall what they were doing then. It may have been the first time you watched television. For younger readers, brought up on 24-hour multi-channel television, that probably sounds incredible. Life has changed hugely in the 60 years since, and today's austerity would have seemed positively luxurious then. That is good to remember. We should also remember that there was a worry that the war in Europe might be repeated. For younger readers, that is probably a fear that has never crossed your minds. So there is a lot for which to be thankful. The one area that I wish to think about is that, by and large, we have had 60 years of law and order. That has not always been the case, and there have been times, even recently, when that has not been the experience of every community in the UK, though generally that is true. For many people in the world, that is not their experience. The result is that the weak and the poor live in fear. If might is right, then the powerful can and do take what they want, and the poor are the victims. Long before this coronation, the Book of Common Prayer, 1662, taught us to pray that under our queen or king, we may be godly and quietly governed. I think to be quietly governed is a good ambition. It is the opposite of the alleged Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. We can only have that when governed and governors agree on the direction society wishes to go. That is a much more challenging idea than 60 years ago. We have been enriched by many insights from other religions and philosophies which did not have a voice then. Yet there may be fewer political models competing to bring about the ideal state. The difficult question is to find the balance between changing what is bad to what is better, and yet retaining what is good from the past. The revolutionaries always concentrate on the bad that must be abolished, and the conservatives on the fear of losing the good values of the past. This anniversary is a good opportunity to give thanks for what has changed for the better and for what has been kept from the past. It is also an opportunity to see how we may keep the important values in a changed situation.
Now we continue with letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Michael. Thank you, Michael.
This one is headed Greedy Guardians of the Countryside, and it's sent in by J. Newman, who lives in Connaught Avenue. Sir, last weekend I decided to drive around our beautiful county and was rather disturbed at what I saw. Farmers tell us about caring for and being guardians of our beautiful countryside. I would dispute this. We seem to have a proliferation of solar farms, planning applications for huge wind farms, pheasant shoots that are nothing more than legalised slaughter, and widespread pollution of waterways caused by overuse of fertiliser, not to mention huge tracts of land for building. Agriculture and our well-heeled landowners receive over 50% of the EU budget in subsidies, and these greedy guardians of our countryside are now chasing huge sums of our hard-earned money to support inefficient renewable energy projects. I am outraged by what is going on and fed up with my taxes, helping to pay the rich richer to make the rich richer and the countryside poorer. J. Newman.
This letter is written by Richard Evans and it's headed Council's Inability to See the Obvious. Sir, Roy Perry received stinging but warranted criticism for his comments on parking for the proposed new primary school at Westgate, which comes before the planners today, that is June the 6th. Councillor Perry was also being disingenuous in his request for better solutions. When the idea of a Westgate primary went to consultation, the overwhelming preference was to enlarge the existing schools. This was supported by residents, parents, teaching professionals, environmentalists and the community as a whole. Even the head of Westgate failed to find a cogent reason for building a brand new primary school when there is already one within 300 yards of his front door. Instead, Councillor Perry has dealt local head teachers a double whammy, dismissing their ability to run larger schools while making them cope with a temporary pupil bulge that will require different staffing skills and resources every year. The plan also requires larger catchments, increasing travel and car usage. The county's own consultants admit there is nothing to be done about the increasing congestion on Stockbridge Road, while the impact of Barton Farm is yet to be taken into account. This lamentable response arose from the council's inability to see the obvious coming. In a few years, the same pupil bulge will reach secondary school age. Where will they go then? Expansion of Westgate Secondary will not be possible if the space has already been taken up by primary children who would have been better placed elsewhere. That was from Richard Evans, Fordington Avenue, Winchester.
Mike Biden writes, "Time for our MP to join the team." Reading Westminster Diary, Chronicle May 23rd, it was good to see our MP acknowledge the fact that the EU brought peace in our time after the horror of war. As a student of history, he may also know that the last 60 years have been the longest period of peace recorded in European history, though fighting in the former Yugoslavia and terrorism by the IRA and Basque separatists show how fragile this is. He also understands that we speak louder with one voice alongside the USA, Russia and China when we work with our European partners. The problem with Mr. Brine is that he can't even work as part of a team within his own party. The Prime Minister is charting a brave and successful course through the difficult waters of financial turbulence and the urgent need to reform the EU. He at least is able to work in partnership in the coalition and is clearly seeking an accord with Germany's Angela Merkel on how best the reforms can be achieved. Meanwhile, Mr. Brine and his friends, instead of supporting his party and the PM, are, as he said himself, banging on about Europe and distracting the government from its vital task of promoting jobs and growth. How much more could the coalition achieve if all the MPs, who are at least notionally members of one of the two parties, could actually work together with the rest of the team? Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
The next letter comes from Ray Corbett, who is a member of the Hampshire Friends of the Earth, and is entitled, "We Have a Duty to Future Generations." "Sir, sitting on a fracking fortune," Chronicle, May 30th, "may make a good headline, but the reality is that nobody knows what Hampshire is sitting on. The six licences issued by DECC are for oil and gas, but mostly oil. Fracking will require specific county planning approval, and so far none has been granted. Whether it happens will depend on the unproven viability of shale-bearing rock. The more serious point is that where we stand now, the governments are in full retreat on doing something drastic about a warming world. In a recent review, 97% of the world's climate scientists point to human activity generating CO2 as the main reason. But how much more can we burn before Earth becomes uninhabitable? Experts reckon burning off a fifth of known reserves of fossil fuels would achieve a 2-degree average temperature rise. At the present rate, this could easily be achieved by 2030 or sooner. But if we burn the lot, we head for a 4 to 6 degree rise and chaos. Fracking is a manifestation of the tendency to look for magic bullets and diversions rather than facing up to taking measures to avoid a catastrophe. Councillor Carew is quoted as saying, "We owe a duty of care to residents, to which I add, and to future generations." Ray Cobbett.
Councillor Eileen Berry, the Deputy Mayor, writes, "Blown away by the beauty of Elijah. Sir, it was my pleasure to attend the recent Winchester Cathedral Mendicant Elijah. I wasn't sure I'd be completely at ease, but I was blown away by the sheer beauty and power of the choirs. Not only was I taken by surprise with the clarity of the four soloists, but it also occurred to me that this was a city and district combination of such magnificent performance. When all the voices were raised as one, it occurred to me I had never heard anything so beautiful. There is so much talent and beauty within our city, and so many dedicated and gifted people. The conductor was superb, and I came away surprised at how much I had enjoyed the 2.25 hours. It opened another portal for me into an area I honestly didn't think was possible." From Councillor Eileen Berry, Deputy Mayor, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock.
"Visitor footfall, so vital for business," is written by Robert Brown from the Winchester Bookshop. Sir, read your recent editorial, "Landlords Must Do More to Help Business." The assertion that independent shops will remain and thrive in Winchester because there is a critical mass of local people who will support them would seem to be contradicted by the story about the closing of a city centre toy shop through lack of custom. Lack of critical mass or lack of local people? Local means many things. But I suspect that we, with many other retail businesses, would be hard put to survive without visitors from out of town, whether they are from other parts of this country or from abroad. Local people are consistent in their support, but they often do not provide sufficient volume of business to make independent shops viable. For these shops, it is critical that visitor footfall is maintained and enhanced, and that facilities such as tourist information, parking, and public transport are freely available. There would be widespread astonishment at the number of businesses which would close if tourists stopped visiting our lovely city. Wintonians may be benefiting more from using visitor-supported shops than visitors are benefiting from local shops. In truth, the two are inextricably mixed. As an independent business, we have every sympathy with fellow small retailers in difficult times. But your suggestion that landlords should take a longer-term realistic view is belied by the fact that there are so few empty shops. The principles of supply and demand seem to be working quite well, and the suggestion that landlords should make less money so retailers could make more money seems, unfortunately for retailers, to be more like wishful thinking than economic reality. Robert Brown, The Winchester Bookshop, St George's Street, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Michael.
200 years ago, June the 6th, 1813. Troops heading home from Paris is the headline. Paris papers have arrived to the second instant. They announce the signature of the treaties of peace, not only with Great Britain, but with Russia, Prussia and Austria. It is remarkable that the peace produced as little effect upon the funds in Paris as it did upon the funds in London. The Allied troops have now commenced their route homewards from Paris. The official communication from Paris, brought by Lord Aberdeen, announces that the Emperor Alexander and the King of Prussia were to leave that capital for England this day, and they may be expected at Dover on Monday or Tuesday. The gallant veterans Blücher and Platoff accompany them. On Saturday, a cause was heard in the Court of King's Bench, brought by Mr. Power, proprietor of Mr. Moore's Irish Melodies, to recover damages of Mr. Walker, another publisher of music, for pirating two of the most popular songs in that work, called Fly Not Yet and Eveline's Bower, the words of which he had not copied verbatim, but with alterations so slight as to be merely colourable. The council went through both songs, original and pirated, and showed that the latter, though entitled The Words by G. Walker, were varied from the former only enough to impose upon the public.
100 years ago was June the 7th, 1913. Horse and trolley crash into pub. About 5:30 on Tuesday evening, a horse and trolley belonging to Messrs. Chaplin and Company and in charge of Walter Matton, a carman, was coming from the London and South Western Railway Station. At the foot of the hill, Matton stopped to take off the drag shoe. He had done this and was hanging the shoe up when the horse suddenly bolted. The animal ran down Swan Lane into Hyde Street, and outside the Swan Inn, the White Swan Inn, it came into collision with a lamp post, which was broken off. Then it went through the window of the White Swan, the shaft of the trolley breaking a pane of glass in the bar. Vital statistics show that the Winchester population, which at the census of 1911 was 23,380, was estimated in June 1912 to be 23,706. There was a net figure of 294 deaths of residents, equivalent to a death rate of 11.1 per thousand of the population. Of 11 recorded individual causes of death, cancer stands the highest, and this was so in 1910 and 1911. Bronchitis comes next, and then tuberculosis. During the year 1912, 60 cases of infectious diseases were notified. These included diphtheria, 12, scarlet fever, 12, typhoid, 4, pulmonary tuberculosis, 28, erysipelas, 4.
And 50 years ago, on June the 8th, 1963, show's move is hailed a success. Fortunate enough once more to be held in perfect weather, the 47th annual show of the Bishops Waltham and District Agricultural Society has, for the second year running, made a three-figure profit. For the second successive year, too, the show had a change of venue, moved to Fair Oak last year in an attempt to provide a more urban appeal. It was on Saturday, held even nearer Eastleigh, at Manor Farm, Bishopstoke. Last year's move turned the financial fortunes of the society and resulted in a profit, And Saturday's event proved even more successful, with an even larger attendance, although the convenient proximity of housing estate roads lessened car park takings. An attempt to delay Andover's £800,000 scheme, the first phase in the redevelopment of the town shopping centre, was overwhelmingly defeated at Tuesday's meeting of Andover Borough Council. Proposing that the plan to build 31 new shops at the rear of the existing frontages in the upper part of the High Street should be deferred, Councillor M. Loveridge said he wanted to see houses and factories being built before anything was touched in the town centre.
This next letter comes from 25 years ago, June 3rd, 1988, and it's headed Call to Save New Forest Commoning. A plea to the Prime Minister to intervene to save commoning, the right to graze animals, has come from the New Forest Commoners Defence Association. It says that the selling of Forestry Commission properties is robbing bases for commoning, and the animal accident carnage on the forest roads is having a dramatic effect on the number of animals turning out. Unless we can get some action, it could mean the end of commoning in the forest, said Association Chairman Captain Tim Moore. His letter to Mrs. Thatcher points out that the property price explosion in the area, brought about by the easy motorway access to London, means that local buildings are out of reach of practising commoners.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Peter and will be followed by First Person, read by Michael. Thank you, Peter.
The heading for this is Beware the Changing Face of Winnell. News that Marks and Spencer wishes to open a food store in Winnell is to be welcomed. It is another vote of confidence in Winchester, the brand. The likely arrival of M&S creates another major shop on the edge of the city to join the recently growing list of Waitrose and Aldi in Week. There should be concerns that this donut effect may suck life out of the city centre, but as the bid points out, Winchester, with its many diverse attractions, retains its allure. On the plus side, M&S will create more than 50 jobs next to the hard-pressed Winnell estate and greater choice for the consumer. However, there are worries that an already congested eastern lane will be further throttled by traffic. Ian Hamilton's concerns at County Glass need to be addressed, as the development will create a new crossroads opposite Moorside Road, a potential new bottleneck. And we need to be aware of the changing nature of Winnell. It was originally an estate of factories created when the Central Brooks area was redeveloped after World War II. But what if manufacturing should enjoy a welcome renaissance? Where will the factories go if land in Winnell is shops, hotels and offices?
First Person, which is Recollections by Ronald Allison. These past few days have provided a variety of anniversaries, some to celebrate, others to at least recall. The two most featured on radio, television and in print have, of course, been the coronation of the Queen in Westminster Abbey and the conquest of Mount Everest, each 60 years ago, but otherwise in complete contrast. The coronation involved thousands from Britain and the Commonwealth and was seen by millions more around the world. That first ascent of the world's highest mountain was accomplished in its latter stages by only a small group of men, and finally, just two. On June the 2nd, 1953, our newspaper headlines were all of Queen Elizabeth II and of Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing. In fact, the two had reached the peak on May 29th, but, would you believe, they couldn't get a signal to tweet the news until later. Talk about good timing. Much less a cause for celebration was marked last Saturday, when the Derby was run at Epsom. 100 years earlier, on Derby Day 1913, a suffragette, Emily Davison, threw herself under the King's horse as the race reached Tattenham Corner. 4 days later, she died of the injuries she had received and became a martyr for the movement. How far she, in fact, influenced her cause is difficult to say. The next year, Britain was at war, and the issue of votes for women was off the agenda for the duration. Which brings me to today. Not a special anniversary as such, but on June 6, 1944, D-Day dawned. The Allied invasion to free Europe began, and here in Hampshire we were well aware of it. In fact, all over the south of England, the military build-up had been underway for months. Many of the Allies' ground forces were moving towards the ports along the south coast, with Southampton naturally heavily involved. My school had been evacuated from there to Bournemouth during the war, but as a 12-year-old, my friends and I had become familiar with the sights and sounds of war. Now it was to be our turn to go on to the attack, and for us it was hugely exciting. I was at an age when I clearly was not particularly sensitive to the realities of the situation. My mother had always made it clear that as well as wanting the war to end in any case, she wanted it to do so before I was old enough to be called up. She didn't seem to share the thrill of the battles to come as we did, but why should she? Her father had been killed in the trenches in 1916, and she knew the fate awaiting so many who were crossing the English Channel that day, and the anguish that would come to their families. I hope I've matured since then.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises 5 items, the first of which is headed, Time to Take Down These Fences. Belgarum wonders why around a quarter of St Catherine's Hill is closed off to the public. Behind the barbed wire is southern water land and a sewage farm. When last asked, the company said the land was still needed for operation reasons. The site is crisscrossed with drainage trenches, but appears to be unused. It would be a marvellous addition to the open space of Winchester if the fences were removed and the land restored to grassland and open to the public.
Councillors can have their cake and eat it too. Parish councillors in Bishop's Waltham had to move quickly to snuff out the flames of a potential scandal. At a recent public meeting, the parish chairman, Judy Marsh, appeared to suggest that certain councillors had accepted a complimentary cake from a local coffee shop, having pitched up for their monthly mobile surgery nearby. Perhaps remembering the tattered careers that ensued from the MP's expenses fiasco, Councillor Barry Nicholson was quick to distance himself from the freebie affair. As Cakegate erupted, it was apparent that crisis management and a clear head were needed. Step forward then, Lindsay Edge, parish clerk. As long as the councillors were to visit all the local coffee shops equally, she ventured.
It all adds up to 3 cups for Simon and Co. An accountant who plays for Alsford Town Football Club is doing more than helping his team fill out their tax returns. He's also leading them to lift trophies. Skipper Simon Everett led his team of underdogs to beat the League One runners-up AFC Bournemouth 3-2 and take home the Hampshire Senior Cup. The tax advisor for CW Fellows also scored a goal during the game at the Championship side's Gold Sand Stadium after winning all 6 knockout games in the tournament. He's been playing football for various local teams since he was 6 years old and joined Alsford Town 3 seasons ago. It was a proud, very proud moment to be part of the team and play against AFC Bournemouth. When we won the final game, I was bursting with pride, and it will be a moment that I will never forget. We've been in three finals now and won all three. It just goes to show that with the right team around you, anything is possible. A philosophy I also apply when serving our clients at C.W. Fellows, the accountants, he said.
Former politicians' top 10 tips for managing a crisis. Former Winchester MP Mark Oughton has been passing on some tips in crisis management. Mr. Oughton, who now lives in Winchester, is chief executive of the International Fur Trade Federation, who knows all about controversy. In the June issue of Management Today, he passes on some common sense advice which senior managers would be wise to heed. Establish the facts before you comment. There is often a big gulf between wild claims and reality. Never lose your cool. When under fire, never lose it when giving an interview to a journalist, be it in print or on TV or radio. Never resort to dirty tricks. Industry people can often become detached from the world at large and allow their imaginations to run away with them. It will almost always backfire. Don't be overly defensive. Just because you are facing controversy or represent an emotive industry, you are allowed your say. Focus on positive facts. Public opinion responds well to facts. Facts that cannot be disputed can work well to soften resistance. Be relaxed about those against you. The easiest way to treat hostile people is to be relaxed around them. If the facts reveal that you or your business are at fault, admit it and say sorry. Sorry is a very powerful word and it should be used more in business. Far too often it comes so late that no one really believes you when you say it. Don't take attacks personally. If you do, it will bring you down. You must learn to detach yourself. Smile. And remember, there are many worse things in life to worry about. Far too many people forget that. After all, it's only a job. Control your mavericks. Whatever you may do as chief executive to manage your company's reputation can easily be wrecked by a wild card in the organisation.
And Belgorov's final item is accompanied by a photograph of a cricket sight screen which is split down the middle quite widely. It's headed "Split Screen, a Sorry Sight." Now, there appear to be two plausible reasons for this recent damage to a sight screen in Winchester. One is that an extremely strong cricketer wielding his willow at North Walls Park has hit the ball very, very hard. The second, and rather less heroic theory, is that an extremely fat person has climbed onto the screen and caused the damage. Let's hope he or she was not hurt too much. In the meantime, Belgorum would love to hear any other explanation. And now we continue with items of general news. The first is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
Aziz to stand down as Naomi House chairman. My 15 years of sadness and joy, he says. To make a child and their family happy makes it all worthwhile. Those are the words of Professor Khalid Aziz, who is stepping down as chairman of Naomi House Hospice in September. Professor Aziz has been leading the charity since 1992, 5 years before the hospice was built. He began his career as a journalist, working for the BBC, then ITV and Channel 4. He said, "It's going to be quite a wrench to leave this behind, but it was my decision to stand down. It's time for new blood at the charity, and I leave it in very good heart and a sound financial position. It's a wonderful charity and will go from strength to strength." The hospice, along with Jack's Place, cares for children and young adults with life-limiting conditions, which means Professor Aziz has experienced many highs and lows over his 2 decades as chairman. He said, we have to say goodbye to most of the children who come here, which is a great sadness, but there is a great amount of joy too. One of the things I asked trustees to do was one shift helping to look after children. I'll always remember a girl called Amanda from my turn. She could not take food through her mouth and had difficulty breathing, relying on a ventilator. But she wanted a picture of herself in a jacuzzi holding a glass of champagne. She thought it was really cool. My job was to look after her ventilator as she was getting into the jacuzzi, and it was nerve-wracking as I worried what might happen to it. But it was fine, and she got the picture, and we used it in our newsletters. He added, "There are many, many examples where we have been able to do something to make a child and their family happy, and that makes it all worthwhile." I cannot forget the fantastic support from people either. I remember receiving a pound coin sellotaped to a piece of cardboard from a pensioner who said it was not much but hoped it was enough. And then I remember receiving the last £500,000 needed to finish the hospice. Both are incredible. He said, "We once had Cliff Richard come along when we topped up the hospice. We had the Army Air Corps band there that day, and there was a great moment where Cliff was up at the roof and started singing Congratulations, and the band picked it up and started playing along." After stepping down, Professor Aziz will take over as chairman at disability charity Enham, based near Andover, and he said he was looking forward to the new challenge. Johnny Grew, deputy chairman of Naomi House, said, "As a trustee and currently deputy chair, I have seen Khalid Aziz chair the Naomi House board with outstanding leadership for over 20 years. He has overseen two very successful appeals and the building of both Naomi House and Jack's Place. He has never shirked from grasping some of the challenging nettles that have appeared during this extensive period of public service to all the children, young adults and families that have benefited from his diligence. The hospice is now on the lookout for an inspirational new chairman to work alongside the board and chief executive Chris Robinson." And there's a very happy photograph, which is a flashback. And Professor Aziz is handed the keys of Naomi House when the building work was completed.
Silver Hill, progressing despite latest setback. Permission could be overturned if firm wins legal bid. Long-running plans to redevelop Silver Hill could be hit by a fresh setback. Eric Pickles, Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government, approved a compulsory purchase order in March to allow developers to secure land and start work. But London and Henley, which owns part of the site, has launched a legal challenge against that decision, which could end with permission being overturned. The City Council and developer partner Henderson Global Investors confirmed the challenge last Friday, and work on the £135 million scheme, however, can begin as the compulsory purchase order remains valid. Martin Perry, Director of Retail Property Development at Henderson, said, "We are still 100% confident and do not expect to have to change our plans or timelines." It's understandable in a process like this, London and Henley would seek any legal route available to them to stop the compulsory acquisition of their land, and we just have to deal with that. The compulsory purchase order was confirmed and is valid, so it does not stop us. We can go forward and take the land. We just have someone trying to overturn the legality of the Secretary of State's decision. We are taking it very seriously, but we are moving forward. Council Deputy Leader Rob Humby said the council would meet Henderson in 2 weeks when leader Keith Woods, who is currently away, returns. He said, "We hope to go ahead within our current timeline, and there is nothing to stop us doing that. But this matter is in the developer's hands at the moment. It is not holding us up, but we need to talk to the developer to find out what the position is and get this issue resolved. It is unknown how long it will take for the challenge to be heard. London and Henley was among several businesses to oppose the scheme at a public inquiry last September, and also had its own vision for redevelopment of the site rejected. The redevelopment covers 6 acres, around a quarter of Winchester city centre, and is the largest in the area since the Brooks Centre was built in the late 1980s. The proposals include shops and flats around a network of streets that link Friars Gate and the Broadway. There will be a new public car park and bus interchange. It will replace the existing surface car parking, the bus station and buildings from the 1950s and 60s. Several city architects and businesses have criticised it as out of date and not viable due to the recession, while others in the business community said it would boost the city centre and bring in more shoppers. They said to scrap the current plans and start again would mean it could be decades before the area is revitalised.
Voluntary Services Award for Blue Apple Theatre Founder. The founder of a Winchester theatre company received an award from the Queen last week. Jane Jessop, founding director of Blue Apple Theatre Company, was presented with the Queen's Award for Voluntary Services at a reception at St James's Palace. Blue Apple, which works with actors with learning disabilities, was the 1,000th recipient of the award. Ms Jessop said, "It was an honour to meet the Queen and a privilege to represent all the Blue Apple volunteers. I was so pleased to have the opportunity to tell Her Majesty about the life-changing work Blue Apple Theatre does for people with learning disabilities. Like many charities, Blue Apple would not exist without its volunteers who help on stage and behind the scenes in so many ways. The Queen's Award recognises the vital contribution of volunteers to the community." The event also marked the 10th anniversary of the award scheme and the Diamond Jubilee of the Queen's coronation.
And here is another piece about the Blue Apple Theatre Group. Our actors at Winchester's Blue Apple Theatre Group premiered their film, Paul's Story, at the Everyman Cinema in Southgate Street last Saturday. The group, which works with actors with learning disabilities, made the 20-minute short, which follows titular Paul, a young man with Asperger's, who suffers abuse from all around the community, leading to a run-in with police. It has been in the works since 2011, after Blue Apple performed its anti-hate crime play, Living Without Fear, to police in Netley. Will Jessop, writer and director, said, "The police response was hugely positive, and we thought it would be good to get this out to a wider circulation. We received funding from the Home Office, and I started consulting police officers and researching in summer 2012. We had help from an extraordinary number of volunteers and had about 50 of them on set at one point." Star James Ellsworthy said, "My character was quite frightened and intimidated, and I hope the film will help other people." Co-star PC Gareth McGaw added, "It was also quite nerve-wracking, so it was lucky I was playing the role of a police officer." And there's a very nice photograph of PC Gareth McGaw, actor James Ellsworthy and director Will Jessop, all smiling and looking very pleased with their achievement.
This piece is headed with a very pleasant photograph of children, the pupils at Kingsworthy Primary School, standing in front of what looks like a beautifully planted forest. Pupils at Kingsworthy Primary said a special thank you to Sparsholt College for improving its grounds. Sparshall students spent 10 weeks on the site in spring, learning woodland skills by clearing trees, thinning bushes and creating a wood chip path. They were invited back to the school to plant a commemorative apple tree, and that's the picture at the top of the piece. Pupils presented the students with thank you cards, while course leader Phil Ruza was given a new box of tools for the college. Mr. Ruza said, "It was lovely to see the kids, and we are really blown away by the cards. The Sparshall students learnt a lot from being here, and the present of tools will make a huge difference to us. It's lovely to come back and nice to hear they've been making the most of the outdoors." Since the work was completed, 15 fruit trees have been planted and the area has been used by the school cross-country running club. In future, it will be used for barbecues, nature trails and teddy bears picnics for Kingsworthy Pre-School. School site manager Chris Carr said, "The potential for this area is huge. These guys have worked so hard, and it's not something we would have been able to do otherwise. Further projects are planned at the school, including work on the pond and on the sports pitch."
Stars add to catwalk success. Winchester's oldest theatre was transformed into a glittering catwalk last week. The Chesil Theatre hosted a sold-out fashion show with help from neighbouring Bridge Street dress shop, The Clothesline. Models also wore some of the theatre's period costumes from past productions, such as Eleanor Marsden in Pygmalion's Eliza Doolittle, and Mimi Gillies in Corset and Bloomers. The event was raising funds for the theatre development, and more than £1,700 was collected thanks to some star power in an auction. Dame Judy Dent provided a signed script, while Sir Ian McKellen donated an autographed tie. Several other items were provided by local businesses, including No. 5 Bridge Street, Little Minster Street Hairdressing, and Movers and Shapers Gym. Organiser Ros Lydiard said, "Planning this show has been immensely rewarding. Thanks to the set designer, building crew, lighting and sound technicians, a proper catwalk in authentic fashion house ambience was skillfully achieved. The whole effect was wonderfully complemented by the energy and professionalism of the models, all Chesil members." And this is accompanied by a wonderful photograph of two Chesil members, Mimi Gillies and Emma Gutteridge, giggling away at each other in costumes from Love's Labour's Lost at the fundraiser. A delightful photograph.
New faces on County Cabinet. Top team announced by Roy Perry. There are some new faces and old hands on the Cabinet that will lead Hampshire County Council for the next 4 years. They are the politicians who will make major decisions on the environment, transport, roads, social services, public health, schools, libraries and country parks. The number of women has doubled from 1 to 2. After being elected leader, Roy Perry, 70, announced his top team at the first full meeting of the council. The former MEP said the council's aim was to boost prosperity, protect the environment, quality of services for young and old, and keep council tax down. Sitting at the top table for the first time is Sean Woodward, Anna McNair Scott, Liz Fairhurst, and Andrew Joy. Councillor Woodward takes over environment, transport services, and the economy, despite also being leader of Fareham Borough Council. Tory chiefs have previously said it was wrong to combine the key roles of cabinet post on the county council with district council leader. Mel Kendall, former environment chief, stood down as leader of New Forest District Council. Speaking after the council meeting, Mr. Perry told the Chronicle, "It is a question of time commitments, of being an executive member and leader of a district council. But Sean assures me that he will have time to do both, having disinvested himself from some of his private business. He is an efficient guy. Former communications chief Colin Davidovits lost his seat on the cabinet, but was elected vice chairman of the council. Mel Kendall, who challenged Mr. Perry for the leadership, has been moved to a newly created finance, energy and resources post. Staying put is Keith Chapman, executive member for culture or recreation or self-styled minister of fun, and Peter Edgar for schools. New portfolios include health, partnerships with outside organisations, finance, energy and resources. The new cabinet is Deputy Leader in Children's Services, Keith Manns. Environment, Transport and the Economy, Sean Woodward. Education and Schools, Peter Edgar. Adult Services, Anna McNair Scott. Culture and Recreation, Keith Chapman. Organisation and Human Resources, Stephen Reed. Finance, Energy and Resources, Mel Kendall. Health, Liz Fairhurst. And Partnerships, Andrew Joy. The meeting of the full council also elected veteran ex-council boss Ken Thornber as chairman of the council. The new makeup of the council is 45 Conservatives, 17 Liberal Democrats, 10 UKIP, 4 Labour and 2 Independents.
Attack victim speaks out after ordeal. The victim of a terrifying sex attack has urged the Good Samaritans who helped her after the ordeal to come forward. The 24-year-old says three teenagers, two girls and a boy, walked her to her home in Eastleigh after hearing her screams. Now the victim, who cannot be named for legal reasons, has made an emotional appeal for the group to come forward to help police with their ongoing inquiries. The mother of one told how the attack had left her scared to go out alone and has urged women to take more care when walking alone at night. She said, "I was walking home via Scott Road and then got into Derby Road when I heard someone running. I went over to the left of the pavement to let them pass me when he ran into me, put his hand over my mouth and throat because I was screaming. I fell to the ground. I was screaming and he put his hand towards my mouth again. She then said he carried out an indecent assault and ran off. Extra police patrols were enforced in the area as a result and officers continue their investigations." The victim added, "I am angry. You hear stories in the news and never think it will happen to you. I want this person to face justice. I want him to know what he has done is wrong. I don't want him to walk around the streets thinking he's got off. He could do it again. I really want people to come forward, even if they heard someone screaming. That's all I ask as a victim. Anyone with information about the incident, which happened at midnight last Thursday, can contact Eastleigh CID on 101.
HMOs still tops list of estates concerns, having say on Stanmore's future. Residents of a Winchester estate want City Council chiefs to stop the area being overrun by students and to tackle antisocial behaviour. A new survey shows a major concern in Stanmore is the 300 houses in multiple occupation, known as HMOs, including 182 occupied by students. Locals complain the character of the estate has changed, with increased late-night noise, littering and bins left out on streets. Other top priorities include more affordable homes for locals. About 750 council dwellings have been sold under right-to-buy legislation, equal to 45% of the total. City Council asked residents for their views on a long-term regeneration scheme for the estate, which is among the third most deprived areas in the country. Controversial proposals included knocking down 49 properties and building on allotments, garages and parts of recreation grounds to make way for 413 new homes. More than 300 people attended public public exhibitions in March and April, though only 106 filled in questionnaires. The results show 7 out of 10 want more community facilities, with the GP surgery top of the list, followed by more for youngsters. There was also widespread support for new play equipment, extra sports pitches, improved pavements and parking. Council leader Keith Wood said the council would look at the findings and investigate costs before coming up with an action plan in the early autumn. He said there was no decision. There is much that we and our partner agencies can take on board, but we will not commit to options that we cannot reasonably deliver. The survey findings come just weeks after a council working party ruled out using planning powers to halt the rise in HMOs. Instead, the council proposes to curb antisocial behaviour with patrols of neighbourhood wardens and on-the-spot fines. A report on the public consultation said a frequent comment was objection to the demolition of existing houses. Other findings included: just under half, 47%, agreed the estate needed more affordable homes, but were divided over possible locations. Most opposed building a large number of houses and flats on tree-lined Wavell Way. 6 out of 10 were in favour of developing the top part of the valley by Wilberforce Close and turning some garage blocks into housing. Least popular were proposals to build on allotments near the railway lines, including Prince's Place and parts of Somers Close Recreation Ground. Residents were also asked for their view on the future use of the former New Queen Head site, which the council bought after it had been on the market for £1 million. Proposals included relocating the Carroll Centre, Scout Hut and Community Association Hall in Somers Close to a new leisure centre on the site. This proposal was supported by less than a quarter compared to a third who preferred no change, and a similar proportion in favour of extending the Carroll Centre and turning the pub site into housing.
Tremendous coup to get River Cottage. Winchester Civic Chief Keith Wood is pressing ahead with plans to let a former mill to celebrity chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. The chef plans to open a River Cottage restaurant in Abbey Mill on Colebrook Street. There have been objections from people living nearby who oppose the proposed loss of some 42 square metres of flower beds for outdoor seating. Other issues include noise pollution, traffic congestion and parking. A council report said the loss of flower beds was small and was outweighed by the benefit of having a successful business in Abbey Mill, formerly the base for the council engineering department. The report acknowledges the opposition but adds, in view of the extensive marketing previously undertaken of the property, the quality of the proposed tenant, and after careful consideration of the public objections, the leader has agreed to proceed with approval without referral of the matter to Cabinet. Financial details are all considered confidential and have not been published. Councillor Wood's decision has approved a revised budget for the refurbishment of Abbey Mill, an increase in the rent to be charged and expenditure for advanced works. There have been 11 objections, as well as some from city councillors. A planning application has yet to be submitted. Councillor Wood's portfolio holder decision notice is the next important step on the road, opening the way for a formal planning application. Councillor Wood said, River Cottage is one of the most inspiring names in food, and it will be a tremendous coup for Winchester to play host to one of just a handful of restaurants run by Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. The project means a new lease of life for an important historic building, annual rental income for Winchester, local jobs, business for local suppliers, and another great reason to visit the city. River Cottage is not just another restaurant for Winchester. The company ethos bring support for apprenticeships and training locally too. While most people will be excited by this prospect, there will be, for a small number, concerns about noise, nuisance and parking. These issues will be carefully and properly considered through the licensing and planning processes. Rob Greekon, Managing Director of River Cottage Canteen and Deli, said, "This is a positive next step towards enabling us to sign the lease. Once signed, our intention is to engage with the local community, employing and working with local people to open at Abbey Mill. Winchester is a fabulous city with a rich heritage and a vibrant artistic and food culture, and we very much hope River Cottage can be part of that."
Stanmore's integrated project approach to learning means that there's always something going on. New video conferencing facilities have enabled years 3 and 4 to have a live chat with an education expert at the National Space Centre, which really enhanced their space topic. Year 5 and Year 6 discovered just what it meant by the mouth of a river when they emerged from the River Itchinta, hurtled around Southampton Water in a speedboat. One excited pupil said, "It was the best school trip ever." Children have been delighted with the arrival of school iPads, and Cedar Class have published an iBook of poetry available from the iBookstore. Pupils have been thrilled to see that it has been downloaded from as far away as the USA and Australia. The school says maths is a much more fun thing when it's an iPad game. You hardly realise you're learning. And with the wealth of books available online, the iPads have been invaluable for discovering a new author or being able to read a book that isn't in the school library. Children from years 4, 5 and 6 will be taking part in a swimming gala at the River Park Leisure Centre tomorrow. The children have been training hard, using the pools at Winchester College and King's School to get themselves ready. Parents, staff, pupils and students from Sparshall College have also been busy in the school grounds over the past few months, clearing overgrown trees and shrubs. The plan includes creating a performance space using a musical stage, erecting a teepee as a quiet space, and designing a drawing trail and a flow wall. A new 2-storey Wendy house for the reception class is soon to be installed and will be officially opened on June the 20th by some special guests, including the Mayor of Winchester. Stanmore Primary runs a summer fair, which will be held on June the 21st. Expect summer fete classics like tombola, raffles, pony rides, a football competition, crockery smashing, candy floss, a barbecue and a Pimm's and beer tent, and newer additions such as a Nerf gun stall. Hat Fair returns to the city next month, and children in years 3 and 4 will be taking part in the parade on July the 4th. There is a buzz about the school in anticipation of the art workshops planned for the costumes.
Common wildflowers are under threat. I'll teach highway staff how to spot the difference. Common wildflowers, which brighten up Hampshire's verges, are threatened by roadside mowing, a wildlife expert has warned. Retired scientist Avril Burt fears primroses, cowslips and oxeye daisies flowering in grass verges could be mown into extinction. And the 81-year-old South Wanston beekeeper has offered to teach highway workers to spot the difference between coarse grass and a variety of native flowers. Mrs. Burt, a former biology teacher, said, "The people who do the grass cutting need a bit of plant knowledge. They go around and cut all the heads off primroses and cowslips before they've had time to seed, and I think they need educating." Mrs. Burt said the way grass cuttings was managed encouraged coarse grasses and nettles at the expense of wayside flowers. She said the cuttings should be removed. is not just the rare flora, but the ordinary common or garden toad flax, primroses and white daisies, which haven't got a chance when they are in these great clumps of coarse grass. Last year, they ruined a patch of cowslips at the junction of Christmas Hill and the A34. They cut the heads off, and there are hardly any left this year. The pensioner offered to help the local authority manage its 4,000 miles of grass verges across the county and to help protect wild native flowers and the other wildlife that depends on them. The charity Plant Life says the huge loss of meadows makes roadside verges and the habitat they create a vital source of food for bees, butterflies, birds and other small mammals. The County Council has designated road verges of ecological importance where rare flower species have been identified, such as the orchid Violet Helleborum. It cuts these verges either early in the year to reduce vigorous grasses or late September, so rare species have had time to flower and yet seed for the next year. However, most of the county's rural verges are cut twice a year, with the first cut in May or June when the plants are flowering and then smothered by leftover cuttings. County Environment Chief Councillor Sean Woodward said trimming roadside verges helped motorists and other road users by providing good visibility. He said, "We manage that with the need to ensure that plant and wildlife habitat of special interest are protected, and with sensible timing, managed verge cutting can support wildflowers and rare species."
Helen's on the front line of wind farm battle. Few people are more painfully aware of how the turbines would tower over the landscape than Helen Butler. What would be the southeast's largest onshore wind farm lies just 800 metres from her historic farm with its distinctive thatched clock, where she runs a wedding business in the hamlet of Tufton Warren. The mother of two, who saved the barns from falling down, said, "The proposed turbines would totally dominate the views from my house and from the five cottages. They would appear much larger than 126 metres as they are set on a hill, increasing the height above Tufton Warren. We would see all 14 turbines. It is absolutely terrifying. The shadow flicker effect would be horrendous." EDF estimates the property would experience about 30 minutes per day shadow flicker from the rotating blades. Mrs. Butler, 59, is also worried about noise and possible health effects from living so close to the turbines. She fears the industrial wind park would jeopardise her business, as its main selling point is its rural setting. "We are running about 60 weddings a year and growing. It would be absolutely devastating. Who would want to get married under a turbine?" In addition to employing 10 people, she estimates her business pumps £3 million per year into the local economy, with suppliers including hairdressers, florists and caterers. And she's angry there is no mention of Clock Barn in EDF's assessment of impact on the local economy. And there's a photograph of Helen and also of the barn with the unique thatched clock tower. And it does look rather special.
Dentist remains on probation. Former Alsford dentist Jonathan Drummond has been kept on probation for another 12 months by his professional body. Mr. Drummond, formerly of Battery Hill, Stanmore, worked at the Baruchin Dental Practice in Alsford. Following several complaints, he was investigated and criticised by the General Dental Council's Professional Conduct Committee for work it branded deplorable. Mr. Drummond, who now lives in Scotland and has been unable to find a job, the committee heard. It is decided to continue to impose conditions on his practice for a further 12 months to improve the standard of his work. The next review by the GDC will be in April 2014.
Shop is let at last. A prominent shop in Winchester Side Street has been let after standing empty for months. Goadsby Commercial has let 71 Parchment Street to Ocean Drive Living Limited on a new lease for 10 years at an annual rent of £30,000. It was previously occupied by the Scope Charity Shop. Amy Baker of Goadsby said, "Parchment Street is very popular as a specialist shopping destination, and we are pleased to have secured a letting to Ocean Drive Living, who will be selling high-end modern furniture and therefore an ideal retailer for this location."
Care home failed 9 of 10 standards. Action plan in place to remedy problems, says boss. A Winchester care home has been criticised by health watchdogs just months after its former manager was thrown out of nursing. St Cross Grange in St Cross missed several Care Quality Commission standards after an inspection in April. It comes after former manager Anne Taylor was struck off in March after allowing a 94-year-old patient to choke to death in 2009. The CQC report found the home did not meet 9 out of 10 essential standards, including safety and leadership. It revealed residents had been transferred to a new building before it was ready to occupy, and that there was a lack of staff. The report said, "We found that the provider's lack of effective communication and leadership had made a negative impact on the way people were cared for, kept safe, and involved in decision-making. People using the service had not been fully involved in decisions relating to the building work, and complaints had not been responded to. At the time of the inspection, the home was without a manager as an interim had left in March. Former boss Tonika Radiva remained registered manager despite leaving in November 2012, as records had not been updated. But the report noted some residents said staff were brilliant and put in 150%. Stuart Cross, deputy chief executive at parent company Greensleeves Homes Trust, said most problems came about due to building difficulties but were being resolved. He said the welfare and comfort of residents at St Cross Grange is our absolute focus. We've undertaken an extensive rebuilding programme, which has been complicated by the discovery of a problem with the water pipes. These have been replaced and our home is now ready for occupation.
The hospital bugs. The public have the chance to hear more about how superbugs are being fought at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Dr. Matthew Dryden, consultant microbiologist at the RHCS, will give a presentation on the work tackling the problem. The public meeting will be held in the Education Centre at the RHCH on Tuesday, June the 25th, starting at 6:30 p.m. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital will also update the public on plans for a critical treatment centre and cancer treatment centre on as yet unspecified site to the north of Winchester. Free parking will be available on level 2 of the main car park.
Boy 15 stole charity box. A boy who stole a charity box from a military museum in Winchester has been referred to the youth offender panel for 3 months. The boy, aged 15, who cannot be named for legal reasons, took the box, value unknown, from the Gurkha Museum in Peninsula Barracks on April the 16th, magistrates in Basingstoke were told. His parents must also pay a £15 victim surcharge.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye and do enjoy the week ahead. We hope to see some of you at the AGM on Monday next. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. and when you put the label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you. That's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tom.
Thank you.